Hello, and welcome to Iris, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier. It's Friday, June 24th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Taking a look at the weather forecast for today, we are watching some rain off to our west this morning. These isolated showers may affect portions of the area early on today, especially the farther west you go. Later tonight into tomorrow still looks like the primary time to watch for some thunderstorms. It appears two rounds are likely, with some redevelopment possible in the mid-late afternoon hours. As we've highlighted through the week, a severe risk exists with any storm that moves through with some gusty wind and hail, the primary threats. Behind this front, it'll be a taste of September on Sunday, with highs into the 70s. Looking at the stories on the front page today, we have CFU leases property to crypto companies, court expands gun rights, abortion clinics won't wait on ruling, and we'll begin reading Democrats Fight for Caucuses. This story was filed by Tom Barton of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Iowa Democrats make final plea for early caucuses ahead of DNC's September vote. Iowa Democrats argued Thursday that the state offers a path to victory for long-shot candidates and opportunities for meaningful conversations with rural Americans from every walk of life as they made their pitch to hold onto their place at the front of the party's presidential nominating calendar. State party officials presented proposed changes for caucuses to the Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee in Washington in an effort to hold on to their first-in-the-nation status. Iowa Democratic Party Chairman Ross Wilburn told committee members, "Iowa presents a, quote, unique opportunity for presidential candidates to connect with voters distributed across urban, rural, and suburban areas in a presidential swing state where a majority of congressional districts are competitive." Quote, "A robust Democratic nomination process in the state introduces voters to candidates and surrogates early, and the organizations they help build in Iowa keep us competitive in the general election," Wilburn said. Iowa is among 16 states and Puerto Rico vying to be included in Democrats' early presidential nominating window ahead of Super Tuesday in early March 2024. The DNC Rules Committee voted in April to reopen the presidential nominating window, forcing all interested states, including the current early nominating states of Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, to apply for a spot. The move came after the current lineup of early nominating states, led by the largely rural and predominantly white states of Iowa and New Hampshire, came under increasing fire for a lack of diversity that many Democrats say doesn't represent the party's true strength. And it follows a chaotic 2020 caucus night for Iowa Democrats when a smartphone app meant to make reporting results easier failed. As a result, the official Democratic caucus results were not reported for several weeks. Iowa Democratic Party officials touted the state's pockets of diversity and argued Iowa serves as an inexpensive and accessible playing field for lesser-known candidates to establish themselves. Quote, "There are diverse communities living, thriving, and dealing with complex political issues in both urban and rural areas of Iowa," Wilburn said. Party officials played a video of Black, Brown, and LGBTQ candidates and party leaders talking about their caucus experience and the importance of the Iowa caucuses. Iowa is the sixth least diverse state in the country. Scott Brennan, a former Iowa Democratic Party chair and the only Iowan on the DNC Rules and Bylaws Committee, argued Iowa still represents an important demographic. Quote, "One of the forms of diversity that Iowa brings, frankly, is the rural working class diversity, and it's a group of folks Democrats have forgotten how to talk to," he said ahead of Thursday's presentation. "And if we can't figure that out under the Electoral College system, we'll be doomed to win popular votes and lose the Electoral College. And that's criminal. And that's on us if we can't figure that out, unquote. National Democrats, too, have complained the party caucuses, compared with state primaries, are too opaque and inaccessible, requiring in-person attendance that can make them difficult for Iowans who work late shifts, lack access to child care or transportation, or have health or mobility problems. To make their caucuses more accessible, Iowa Democrats proposed eliminating the requirement for in-person attendance and are reorganizing the caucus practice of identifying candidates' viability under multiple rounds. Under the proposed changes, an Iowa Democrat would request a presidential preference card in the mail and would have 14 to 28 days to either mail it back or return it in person caucus night. On caucus night, the Iowa Democratic Party would report the results publicly. The caucuses themselves would focus primarily on conducting party business, such as electing delegates. The state party would also contract with either a DNC-approved election vendor or with a county auditor or the Iowa Secretary of State's office to ensure a fair and trustworthy process. Our next story was written by journalist Andy Malone. Cedar Falls Utility leases land to two local cryptocurrency companies, Dateline Cedar Falls. Until recently, never before had Cedar Falls Utilities been approached by cryptocurrency companies wanting to lease its unused land for operations, said Mike Litterer, Director of Customer Services and Business Development. In less than 12 months, CFU has agreed to leases with two Cedar Falls-based companies, Simple Mining LLC and Energy Conversion Group LLC, for the temporary, quote, placement of structures used for crypto mining, unquote. These early-stage companies use lots of energy and would be the largest on the system if fully developed, said Litterer. But, he said, they bring down the average cost of power because of their efficient operations, 24 hours per day, 7 days per week. That's the biggest benefit to CFU customers, said Litterer. Any revenue generated, he emphasized, will be invested back into the system and used to help pay overhead costs. At the peak demand for energy, or when high market costs arise, especially on hot days, the cryptocurrency operations are the first to see their energy reduced to limit the load on the system. The companies are defined in CFU documents as large volume commercial customers with a minimum build demand of 1,500 kilowatts at each property, but they must have the capability to reduce at least 90% of their load upon request by CFU. With the blessing of the Public Utilities Board of Trustees, the three-year leases generate $1 per square foot per year. Simple Mining President Adam Hayes agreed to a deal for 11,100 square feet near the Streeter Station power plant. Energy Conservation Group Manager Ben Storrow accepted 22,050 square feet next to the IP substation on 605 West Ridgeway. Their contract rate agreements say Simple Mining and Energy Conversion Group pay monthly base service charges of $125 and $500, respectively. On top of that, both companies pay a demand charge of $8 per kilowatt and an energy charge of $0.005 per kilowatt hour. The cryptocurrency companies cover the infrastructure costs needing to operate their businesses and hook up to CFU. The next story comes to us from the Associated Press. Supreme Court expands gun rights, and it begins with a photograph of a salesman standing in front of rows and rows of guns. And the caption says, Salesman John Lasada demonstrates a competition shooting gun at SP Firearms on Thursday in Hempstead, New York. Dateline, Washington. In a major expansion of gun rights, after a series of mass shootings, the Supreme Court said Thursday that Americans have a right to carry firearms in public for self-defense, a ruling likely to lead to more people legally armed. The decision came out as Congress and states debate gun control legislation. About one quarter of the U.S. population lives in states expected to be affected by the ruling, which struck down a New York gun law. The High Court's first major gun decision in more than a decade split the court 6-3, with the court's conservatives in the majority and the liberals in dissent. Across the street from the court, the Senate on Thursday easily approved a bipartisan gun violence bill that seemed unthinkable just a month ago, clearing the way for final congressional approval of what will be lawmakers' first far-reaching response in decades to the nation's run of brutal mass shootings. The $13 billion measure would toughen background checks for the youngest gun buyers, keep firearms from more domestic violence offenders, and help states put in place red flag laws that make it easier for authorities to take weapons from people adjudged dangerous. It would also fund local programs for school safety, mental health, and violence prevention. The House planned to vote on the measure Friday, and approval seemed certain. Also Thursday, the sister of a 9-year-old girl killed in the school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, pleaded with state lawmakers to pass gun legislation. The Republican-controlled legislature has stripped away gun restrictions over the past decade. President Joe Biden said in a statement he was deeply disappointed by the Supreme Court ruling. It contradicts both common sense and the Constitution, and should deeply trouble us all, he said. He urged states to pass new laws. Quote, I call on Americans across the country to make their voices heard on gun safety. Lives are on the line, he said. The decision struck down a New York law requiring people to demonstrate a particular need for carrying a gun in order to get a license to carry a concealed firearm in public. The justices said that requirement violates the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. Justice Clarence Thomas wrote for the majority that the Constitution protects an individual's right to carry a handgun for self-defense outside the home. That right is not a second-class right, Thomas wrote. We know of no other constitutional right that an individual may exercise only after demonstrating to government officers some special need. Unquote. California, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Rhode Island all have laws similar to New York's. Those laws are expected to be quickly challenged. Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat from New York, said the ruling came at a particularly painful time, with New York mourning the deaths of 10 people in a shooting at a supermarket in Buffalo. Quote, this decision isn't just reckless, it's reprehensible. It's not what New Yorkers want, she said. Gun control groups called the decision a significant setback. Michael Waldman, president of the Brennan Center for Justice and an expert on the Second Amendment, wrote on Twitter that the decision could be the biggest expansion of gun rights by the Supreme Court in U.S. history. Republican lawmakers were among those cheering the decision. Tom King, president of the plaintiffs' New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, said he was relieved. Quote, the lawful and legal gun owner of New York State is no longer going to be persecuted by laws that have nothing to do with the safety of the people and will do nothing to make the people safer, he said. Quote, and maybe now we'll start going after criminals and perpetrators of these heinous acts, unquote. The court's decision is somewhat out of step with public opinion. About half of the voters in the 2020 presidential election said gun laws in the U.S. should be made more strict, according to AP VoteCast, an expansive survey of the electorate. An additional one-third said laws should be kept as they are, while only about 1 in 10 said gun laws should be less strict. About 8 in 10 Democratic voters said gun laws should be made more strict, VoteCast showed. Among Republican voters, roughly half said the laws should be kept as they are, while the remaining half closely divided between more and less strict. In a dissent joined by his fellow colleagues, Justice Stephen Breyer focused on the toll from gun violence. Since the beginning of this year, quote, there have already been 277 reported mass shootings, an average of more than one per day, Breyer wrote. He accused his colleagues in the majority of acting without considering the potentially deadly consequences of their decision. He said the ruling would severely burden states' efforts to pass laws that limit, in various ways, who may purchase, carry, or use firearms of different kinds. Several other conservative justices who joined Thomas's majority opinion also wrote separately to add their views. Justice Samuel Alito criticized Breyer's dissent, questioning the relevance of his discussion of mass shootings and other gun death statistics. Alito wrote that the court had decided, quote, nothing about who may lawfully possess a firearm or the requirements that must be met to buy a gun, and nothing, quote, about the kinds of weapons that people may possess. Quote, today, unfortunately, many Americans have good reason to fear they will be victimized if they are unable to protect themselves. The Second Amendment, he said, guarantees their right to do so, unquote. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, joined by Chief Justice John Roberts, noted the limits of the decision. States can still require people to get a license to carry a gun, Kavanaugh wrote, and conditions that license on fingerprinting, a background check, a mental health records check, and training in firearms handling and in laws regarding the use of force, among other possible requirements. Next, from the Associated Press, abortion clinics won't wait on ruling. No delay planned prior to 24-hour pause start. Dateline Des Moines. The Iowa Attorney General's Office said Wednesday that a state Supreme Court decision that requires a 24-hour waiting period before an abortion won't take effect until next month, but the organization that provides most abortion in the state says it will immediately implement the waiting period. A spokesman for the Iowa Attorney General's Office said last week's ruling would not take effect until the case has been returned to the lower court judge for further action, likely around July 8th. Typically, Supreme Court opinions go into effect 21 days after they are released. After the ruling, Planned Parenthood North Central States officials said the organization would immediately implement the waiting period as recommended by its legal counsel, the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. Emily Biesick, the organization's vice president for communications, said despite the attorney general's belief that the waiting period wasn't required yet, it would stick by its waiting period decision. Quote, the last thing we want is for patients to be inconvenienced, Biesick said in the statement. Quote, without clear guidelines on when the forced 24-hour waiting period would begin, we had to implement the law in order to confidently keep providing abortion care in Iowa. Rolling back the new process now would further burden patients and create more challenges and confusion for care, not to mention more rescheduling, unquote. The waiting period was included in a Friday state Supreme Court ruling in which the court reversed its 2018 decision that guaranteed the right to abortion. The court concluded it had wrongly decided abortion is among the fundamental privacy rights guaranteed by the Iowa Constitution and federal law. In its decision, the court also overturned a lower court's ruling that a state law passed in 2020 that required a 24-hour waiting period before a woman can get an abortion was unconstitutional. The Supreme Court's decision on the waiting period means Planned Parenthood's challenge of the law will be considered under a different legal standard that could make it easier for the governor and the legislature to overcome the constitutional legal challenge and enact the law. Now we turn the page to the Cedar Valley section, and Andy Malone filed this story, School Boosts Housing. Lots at West Fork Crossing in Cedar Falls could become available next summer. Dateline Cedar Falls. West Fork Crossing will soon have lots developed for single-family homes northwest of where the new high school is being built. Panther Builders plans to develop the platted area north of West 27th Street or sell to buyers ready to build homes. According to Kevin Fittrow, CEO of Panther Builders, which is responsible for several developments in the area, like Prairie West, about half of them will be built by his company. An aggressive projection is that grading of the development could start this fall. Streets could be paved as early as next spring. Lots could become available next summer, with 80% or 90% sold or spoken for by the end of next year, said Fittrow. The 120-acre parcel, currently farmland between Union Road and Waterbury Drive, is a project of Brent Dahlstrom and Echo Development. A total of 62 building lots on the northern part of the subdivision are intended to be developed as the first addition. At the moment, Fittrow is not aware of any concerns or issues that could delay the project from moving forward. At issue in August 2020 was the timeline for a continuous road to be built throughout the future 177-acre development. Earlier this month, Cedar Falls City Council approved a revised preliminary subdivision plat as details of the plan were updated in anticipation of the development's first phase. Quote, the developer realized that it would be beneficial to create more uniform lots as some were deeper than necessary and some were too shallow, wrote city staff in a memo to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Making the lots more uniform will require a shift of the roads and will change the size and shape of the stormwater basins. It will also result in one additional lot in Phase 1. The initial focus is on the 120 acres, but Money Pit LLC and Waterbury Property Investors LLC, owners of the land, have another nearly 60 acres to the south. Fittrow said the project is planned with the same vision as his previous developments, Prairie Winds and Prairie West, in the southwest portion of the city. Quote, if you look at the lot supply in Cedar Falls, after 20 years in this business, this is the lowest number of lots I've seen, and we're excited to be building and developing these lots for the community, said Fittrow. Our next story comes from Courier staff. Drill team event expands. Weekend competition adds to Excellence Expo. Dateline Waterloo. A long-established drill team competition is expanding to add a new event to its Weekend of Arts and Culture. Marching Against the Darkness, Inc. will hold its first Excellence Expo from 5 to 9 p.m. on July 8th at the Waterloo Convention Center. It will include a college and career fair with higher education institutions and businesses from 9 states. There will also be leadership seminars led by Jenna Weekly and Madeline Ridgway. To cap it off, there will be arts workshops offering dance, step, color guard, and percussion sessions. The organization's drill team competition, drawing teams from Midwest, East, and West Coasts, will be July 9th at Young Arena. Doors open at 5 p.m., and the competition begins at 6 p.m. This will be the competition's 21st year. The expo event is open to all 6th through 12th grade students. A meal is provided, and students will have the chance to win prizes. Registration is free, but participants must register online by June 30th. Registration is limited, so students and/or their parents are encouraged to register immediately. Among the sponsors and donors are Guernsey Charitable Foundation, Tyson Fresh Meats, Meat in Iowa, Community Bank and Trust, and Lincoln Savings Bank. The organization is still accepting event sponsors, vendor registrations for the college and career fair, and advertisements for their event booklet. If interested, go online and find info on the sponsors and vendors page. Those interested can also reach out to the executive director, Darville Givens, at director@matd.org or by calling area code 319-504-2309. Information on admission costs and more for the drill team competition can be found online at matd.org. Marching Against the Darkness can also be found on all social media platforms at matd_org. Next, we have an article filed by Andy Malone titled, No Enforcement Holiday. Fireworks shot out of set times bring fines. Dateline Cedar Falls. Independence Day is right around the corner, but don't expect public safety officers to be taking a holiday. Instead, the Public Safety Department will be executing a plan for enforcing a new zero-tolerance fireworks policy, said Acting Police Chief Mark Howard, despite, quote, not usually liking to take away an officer's discretion for deciding whether to cite someone. Quote, there's no good excuse you can give for why you're using them outside the allowable time frame, he noted. The city council, in a 4-2 vote, lifted the prohibition on consumer fireworks within Cedar Falls earlier this month, despite a few residents publicly denouncing that stance. The change creates a common policy between the cities of Cedar Falls and Waterloo, limiting confusion on where fireworks are allowed. Between noon and 11 p.m. July 4th and noon to 10 p.m. July 3rd and 5th is when they'll be allowed on private property, not in public areas like in parks or on sidewalks. Fines have been hiked from a minimum of $250 to $375. Second and third offenses are $500 and $1,000, respectively. They can be appealed in court. There's been no shortage of messaging online and around town, making it one of the largest, if not the largest, education campaigns ever done by Public Safety Department. Quote, if only being allowed for a short time frame, people can prepare for it, Howard said. We can hopefully lessen the usage instead of it being a month-long event. In fact, Howard said more than 50 intersections have signage with basic information about the new law, and more than $2,100 has been spent on the campaign. A special team made up of 3 to 5 officers already has written a few citations. The team consists of a supervisor, police reserves, on-duty firefighters, and police officers on overtime. They anticipate being ready for the days around the fireworks usage window, as well as during special summer events like the Sturgis Falls celebration. Quote, this is the time to be a good neighbor, and if you do have something planned, to let your neighbors know, for instance, if they have a dog or a young child, he said. Howard also reminded people not to fire off illegal fireworks like large aerial skyrockets. Don't get creative. That's when severe accidents happen, he said. Use them as they were intended. Mostly at night during the first week of July is when the team will be assembled to do nothing but fireworks enforcement, he noted. It will also operate at some other random times during the warmer months. Past history shows fireworks calls drop off a cliff after July 6th, Howard said. Last year, July 6th to December 31st, there were 18 calls. Howard reminds people to call 911 right away if they hear or see fireworks being used outside the allowable hours and days. Quote, the longer you wait, the harder it is to prove it, he said. Anything people think can be used as proof, he encourages them to keep to help make sure we're citing the right person, unquote. If the person decides to appeal, which Howard said is rare, a complainant may have to testify in court. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, June 24th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. In Hudson, John Lee Clausen, 97, of Hudson, Iowa, passed away peacefully on Monday, June 20th, 2022, at his home and surrounded by loved ones. Visitation will be held on Sunday, June 26, 2022, from 1 o'clock p.m. until 3 o'clock p.m., followed by a brief funeral service at the Abel's Funeral and Cremation Service, French Hand Chapel, in Rhinebeck, Iowa. Burial will be held privately at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be made by visiting www.ablesfuneralhomes.com. John was born November 21st, 1924, on the family farm south of Rhinebeck, Iowa, to his parents Marcus M. and Isabel Clausen. He enlisted in the United States Navy and served from 1943 until 1946. John was part of a naval intelligence unit in Washington, D.C., Panama, and Japan, censoring top-secret cablegrams. Some things that John was proud of, besides his time in the military, were his team winning the AAU basketball tournament in Marshalltown, Iowa, and also playing in the national tournament in Denver. John was asked to attain a training camp for the New York Yankees in 1948, which he loved till his last day. He married Helen Dunham in 1947. She preceded him in death in 1968. He then married Vivian Holm in 1971. She preceded him in death in 2015. To those two unions, four children were born: Clayton, Cheryl, Susan, and Michael. John began working at the Rath Packing Company in Waterloo, Iowa. He then went on to John Deere and later Smitty's Dairy, where he was a rural milkman delivering milk to the Hudson and Dyke area. John then went to work as an assistant manager for the Co-op of Hudson, from which he retired in 1986. He kept busy after retirement, driving the anhydrous tanks for the Co-op of Hudson for many years. John was a 70-year member of the American Legion Action Post 242 in Rhinebeck, and a 20-year member of the Rhinebeck Masonic Coin Lodge, number 394. He loved his camping and fishing trips to Otter Creek Lake in Toledo, Iowa, and later Deerwood Lake in Evansdale, Iowa. John enjoyed many years of cheating at cards with friends and family. He loved to play golf, go to auction houses, sports, especially the Iowa Hawkeyes, and the New York Yankees, and was honored to be able to take the honor flight to Washington, D.C. with his son, Clay Clausen, in 2011. However, his true joy in life came from spending time with his friends and family. Next, Patricia Ann Wayne Swigert Grossclose, 74, of Jordan, Minnesota, passed peacefully in her sleep on May 30, 2022, after a long battle with depression, diabetes, Lewy body dementia, and Parkinson's disease. Services will be June 27, 2022, at Friendship Church in Prior Lake, Minnesota. Visitation is from 1 p.m., followed by the service at 2 p.m., with food to follow. Interment will be June 28, 2022, at Fairview Lester Cemetery in Dunkerton, Iowa, at 2 o'clock p.m. Bayview Freeborn Funeral Home in Albert Lea, Minnesota, is in charge of funeral arrangements. Now, Parkersburg, Henry Thomas Heron, age 101, of Parkersburg, died Wednesday, June 22, 2022, at his home. Funeral services will be 10 o'clock a.m. Monday, June 27th, at the Christian Reformed Church in Parkersburg, with burial at Stout Cemetery in Stout. Visitation will be 5 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. on Sunday, June 26th, at the Christian Reformed Church in Parkersburg. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.redmanfuneral.com. The Courier lists one death notice today. Daryl A. Lau, 83, of Olwine, died Wednesday afternoon, June 22, 2022, at the Buchanan County Health Center in Independence. Arrangements are being made with Jameson Smith's Funeral Home in Olwine. Now let's turn to the opinion section. This editorial comes to us from the Storm Lake Times Pilot and was written by Art Cullen. What did Grassley mean? Mike Franken raises a good question. What did Senator Chuck Grassley know on January 5th when he said that Vice President Mike Pence might not be in attendance to preside over clarifying the presidential election vote on January 6th? Grassley has denied knowing anything about efforts to pressure Pence into somehow scotching the vote in the Senate, a plan that the president's own advisors knew was illegal. Quote, well, first of all, I will be, if the vice president isn't there, and we don't expect him to be there. I will be presiding over the Senate, Grassley told reporters on January 5th, regarding his role as Senate President pro tem. Earlier, Grassley acknowledged that Joe Biden had been duly elected president. A memo to Rudy Giuliani suggested that Grassley or another senior Republican senator should preside over the certification process and not Pence. Grassley denies that he was ever approached about any scheme, but he did say that challenges to the process would be considered. These statements are confusing and deserve further clarification by Grassley. Grassley has not explained, to our knowledge, what he meant to suggest when he said that he did not expect Pence to show up. Franken surely will not let go until Grassley addresses what happened leading up to the insurrection. It's an interesting topic that will engage independents who voted for Grassley all these years, but who have grown weary and now skeptical of him. This next one is also from Storm Lake Times pilot and Art Cullen, titled Politics of Justice. We said over a decade ago that it was a dark day for Iowa when voters unseated three Supreme Court justices for ruling that homosexuals could not be discriminated against as a class and that they should be allowed to marry. That's when the politicization of the court began in earnest. Three justices, appointed by Democratic and Republican governors, were turned out when Iowa family leader lured outside money into the state to affect our elections and judicial system. Since then, the Supreme Court has become predictably conservative. Former justices and lawyers who argue before the court see it and acknowledge it. It should not have been a big surprise that the court reversed its own decision of 4 years ago that the state constitution guarantees a right to an abortion. Since its earlier ruling, the court has seated four appointees by Governor Kim Reynolds. Iowans have voted to limit rights of women, to not encumber business or agriculture with regulation, and to deny workers due process to pursue their claims. All of this is expressed by the Supreme Court. As our politics become more extreme, so do our courts. The abortion ruling last Friday was all about politics. The deck is cleared for the United States Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade and allow Iowa to ban abortion, as it is sure to do under Republican leadership. The Iowa Supreme Court made abortion a live issue in the legislature and gubernatorial races. It's what the party has been working for all these years. In Iowa, the tide is not with Democrats to undo the trifecta of Republican control over all branches of government, including the court. Abortion probably will be illegal in Iowa. It's what voters have been asking for. The court, having become a servant of politics, delivered. If the U.S. Supreme Court reverses Roe v. Wade, abortion could reshape the midterm elections in Iowa. It could cause women to turn out more for three women running for Congress, and especially help Iowa's lone incumbent Democrat, Representative Cindy Axne. It could turn some key statehouse races. It's hard to say that abortion will be a prevailing issue in statewide races for governor or for U.S. Senate. Democrats are not well positioned to organize around this issue or any combination of issues effectively. Witness the past decade and the Iowa Supreme Court. Next, the Courier has included an editorial by Rika Basu of the Des Moines Register, and it's titled NRA Spending Raises a Red Flag. On March 15th, 22-year-old Eden Montang of Ames made an Instagram post about red flags, a topic that, uncannily, is now being debated in Congress. Quote, "Stop treating red flags as challenges instead of warning signs," she wrote, framing it as unsolicited relationship advice, unquote. Most likely, although she didn't name Jonathan Whitlatch, it was advice gleaned from her own relationship with the man who authorities say killed her June 2nd, less than 3 months later. Montang, a graduate of Boone High School and a senior in Iowa State University's College of Human Services, who worked with the Iowa National Guard, was shot to death outside Cornerstone Church in Ames. She and her 21-year-old friend Vivian Flores were going there for a service. Authorities named Whitlatch, who had been abusive toward her and with whom she had broken up, for both death as well as his own. Every month, an average of 70 women are shot and killed by an intimate partner in America. Every day, 111 people are killed with guns. Had there actually been a red flag law in place, a minimal step the federal government could take to prevent such future carnage, maybe all three lives could have been saved. But one of Montang's senators, Iowa Republican Joni Ernst, won't support one. She has called red flag laws unfair for targeting people over a feeling. Two things are worth noting about that. One, Ernst has never expressed as much concern over black motorists being too frequently stopped and pulled over by police over a mere feeling, also known as racial profiling. And two, the National Rifle Association has spent $3.68 million on her behalf since her first run for federal office in 2014, putting her in the top five among beneficiaries in office. On Wednesday, the Democratic majority U.S. House passed the Protecting Our Kids Act, which would, among other things, raise the minimum age to purchase an assault rifle to 21, bar the sale of large capacity magazines, and institute new rules on appropriate gun storage at home and on guns without a serial number. But the Senate isn't expected to follow suit because Democrats hold only 50 seats and it would take 60 votes to pass. Democrats overwhelmingly, 91%, want more restrictive gun laws, but only 24% of Republicans do, according to a Gallup poll. And the Republicans win on this every time. With such NRA vote-buying abilities, don't hold your breath for any meaningful gun reform to pass. So, instead, senators are negotiating over background checks on gun buyers and red flag laws. Those would allow people who suspect a particular weapon owner is a threat to themselves or the public to file a court petition to seize their weapons for a set amount of time. The Ames shootings, coming on the heels of the mass shootings of school children in Uvalde, Texas, and grocery shoppers in Buffalo, New York, have a chorus of Americans crying, "Enough is enough." Uvalde and Buffalo were among at least 232 shootings just this year, in which four or more people were killed or injured, according to the Gun Violence Archive. But such cries for tougher gun measures after each horrific new round have gone unanswered, and that's even though 89% of people support background checks for all gun purchases, including private and gun show sales. 86% back red flag laws. 60% want to ban high-capacity magazines. 56% would ban assault weapon sales. And 52% support mandatory assault weapon buyback programs. On Wednesday, all but five House Republicans voted against the Protecting Our Kids Act. There's a financial incentive. Just research NRA contributions and look up the names of the Republican politicians opposing such legislation. In his speech a week before, President Joe Biden called for an assault weapons ban, expanding background checks, and red flag laws. But he pointed out that the majority of the Senate Republicans don't want any of these proposals even to be debated, much less voted on. After the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas school shooting in Parkland, Florida in 2018, Students Demand Action became active. Quote, "Sometimes it takes a huge tragedy like the Parkland shooting to open people's eyes, wake them up, and motivate them," said a gun violence survivor, 17-year-old Julia Spohr, then. Quote, "But I think we have that right now." She was quoted in Michelle Rome's McCain's 2019 book, Enough is Enough. But since 2018, there have been 119 school shootings in the U.S. Guns are now the single largest cause of death for teenagers and young adults. It's as if America's being held hostage by a foreign power that's shooting 117,345 of our people every year and killing 111 every day with guns. But the majority of citizens and the president can't do anything to stop it as long as there are enough holdouts in Congress. In 2016, the NRA spent a record more than $419 million to, among other things, get Donald Trump and Republicans elected to the U.S. House and Senate. The money was also spent on legislative programs and public affairs, according to an audit obtained and shared by the Center for Responsible Politics. Senator Chuck Grassley has benefited from more than $224,937 of NRA spending and has a current campaign ad boasting of having its endorsement along with Donald Trump's and more. That prompted the nonprofit group Progress Iowa to call on Grassley last week to take it down. But I say, let him leave it up. Iowans and the nation should see the senator's true priorities. Here's one simple thing you can do as a voter. Before you vote in November, check out the candidate's contributions from the NRA. The website opensecrets.org has good tallies. See if those correlate with their positions on gun safety. If they want to point in any direction but toward sensible gun reform measures in response to these multiplying tragedies, ask yourself why. And then, for heaven's sake, for children's sake, for the sake of your own conscience, vote for someone else. Next, we have an article filed by Aaron Murphy of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau, and it's titled, Five to be Interviewed for Iowa Supreme Court Vacancy, Dateline Des Moines. Five applicants will be interviewed for an opening on the Iowa Supreme Court that will occur when Justice Brent Appel retires next month, the court announced in a news release Monday. When Governor Kim Reynolds appoints the new justice, it will be her fifth appointment to the seven-member court. All five candidates will be interviewed June 27th by the state's Judicial Nominating Commission. The 17-member commission will select three finalists, after which Reynolds will have 30 days to select one of the finalists as the next justice. When she makes this next selection, Reynolds will have appointed five Iowa Supreme Court justices during her 6 years in office. Appel is the court's last remaining member who was appointed by a Democratic governor, Tom Vilsack, in 2006. Appel was retained by voters in the 2016 judicial retention elections. Next is the Metro Briefs column, Kids Parade Friday at Sturgis Park, Dateline Cedar Falls. Sturgis Falls will hold its 27th annual Kids Parade for children ages 12 and under at 4:45 p.m. Friday at Lincoln Elementary School. Participants are encouraged to wear costumes and incorporate wagons or strollers into their overall look. All contest winners will receive awards at 5 p.m. at the Kidsway Big Top Stage immediately following the parade. Brad Jacobson's State Farm Insurance is sponsoring the parade and judging the contest winners. The big three-wheel 500 race will take place right after the children's parade for children 2 to 5 years old. Bring a bicycle or a big wheel along with your bike helmet. Next, Waverly Vets hold Fish Fry. The Waverly Area Veterans Post will host its monthly cod fish fry on Friday. Make reservations for curbside serving from 5 to 6 p.m. or dine in from 5:30 to 7. The cost is $12. Call area code 319-483-9287 any day from 4 p.m. until 8 p.m. Thursday. Here's the Ask the Doctors column. Many people become more flatulent as they age. Dear doctors, as I move into my 80s, I often pass gas in public. It happens unexpectedly, and it's something I cannot control. I know about gas-causing foods, but this seems different. I do eat grains as part of my healthy diet, and I think that may be part of it. Why else might this be happening? Dear reader, whether it emerges as a burp or flatulent, passing gas is a normal part of human digestion. Estimates for how often a healthy person rids themselves of gas range from 5 to 15 or more times per day. Gas gets introduced into the gastrointestinal tract in two ways. The first is through the mouth, which occurs while eating, drinking, speaking, and in the course of swallowing saliva. This gas, which accumulates in the esophagus, is typically released the same way it entered, via the mouth. The second source of gas, which is released through the anus, is the microorganisms that break down food that has passed from the stomach to the bowel. They do this through fermentation, a process that creates gas as a byproduct. The result is flatulence, which is more commonly, and some say crudely, referred to as farting. This is estimated that the average healthy adult can expel up to 2 liters of different types of gas, including methane, nitrogen, and carbon dioxide, each day. How much varies from person to person. It depends on variables such as diet, the specific composition of the individual's gut microbiome, and their general health. Anecdotal evidence links older age to increased gas production. This has been attributed to the metabolic changes that take place at this time of life. These include a general slowing of the metabolism, a decrease in muscle tone, and less effective digestion. Although flatulence is part of daily life, changes to the amount of gas we are passing can be indicators of changes in our bodies and to our health. When passing gas is accompanied by bloating, pain, diarrhea, weight loss, and changes to appetite, it can be signs of underlying disease. This can include celiac disease, small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, irritable bowel syndrome, or inflammatory bowel disease. If you experience these symptoms, you should check with your health care provider. Now back to local news from the Courier. Teen charged with taking handgun during burglary. Dateline Waterloo. And the story was filed by Jeff Reinitz. A teen has been charged with stealing a handgun from a home in May. The 15-year-old was charged Wednesday with second-degree burglary, carrying weapons, third-degree theft, and trafficking in stolen weapons. Authorities allege he took the weapon along with a laptop computer, video game console, and other items from a house that was for sale on Prospect Boulevard. A door to the home had been left unlocked, police said. Investigators recovered video evidence from a neighbor's security camera, according to police. Iowa U.S. House members vote no on shooter alerts. Story filed by Tom Barton of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. The U.S. House on Wednesday failed to pass a bill that would create a communications network that would alert people when an active shooter is in their community. The bill failed to pass under a motion to suspend the rules, a process that allows legislation to be passed quickly with two-thirds support, despite bipartisan backing. The bill failed 259 to 162, with 161 Republicans and one Democrat, Ron Kind of Wisconsin, voting against, while 44 Republicans joined 215 Democrats in favor of the bill. Among those Republicans who voted nay were U.S. Representatives Ashley Hinson, Marionette Miller Meeks, and Randy Feenstra. Democrat U.S. Republican Cindy Axne of West Des Moines voted in favor. The bill would create an Amber Alert-style system for active shooter situations, according to the bill's sponsors. U.S. Speaker Nancy Pelosi said in a statement Wednesday night the bill would be brought to a vote again and passed by the Democratic majority, The Hill reported. Pelosi also took aim at the GOP House members who inexplicably opposed the measure. Hinson, on her weekly conference call with Iowa reporters Thursday, said she thought the bill moved too quickly and didn't consider all the impacts to a community about sending out an alert like that, and what they can do to invite panic and also put burdens on our law enforcement and keep them from being able to do their job in an emergency situation, unquote. She said she tends to continue to reach out to our local law enforcement on solutions, unquote. Hinson did not elaborate as how the bill would hinder law enforcement from responding to an active shooter situation. Her office noted the Marion Republican co-sponsored the Stop 2, Secure Every School and Protect Our Nation's Children's Act to fund school resource officers and mental health counselors, bolster school security, and establish a way for the federal government, schools, and law enforcement to to better communicate and provide training. The Active Shooter Alert Act calls for the Department of Justice to appoint a national coordinator of the Active Shooter Alert Communications Network that would set up the alert system. Quote, "The Active Shooter Alert Act is a common sense, straightforward solution that will help save lives," Democrat and bill sponsor David Cicilline of Rhode Island said in a statement. Quote, "Developing these types of alert systems is a significant undertaking that requires precise and intricate protocols, and some communities just simply do not have the resources or the expertise for such a project. We have the federal infrastructure to provide this technology to every city and town across the country, and it would be a shame not to do so," unquote. Federal lawmakers have faced increasing pressure to pass legislation related to gun safety in the wake of several recent mass shootings. The U.S. Senate, earlier this week, voted to advance a bipartisan gun safety bill. The proposal would provide states with grants to enact so-called red flag laws, keeping guns out of the hands of people who are judged to be a threat to themselves and others. It would expand background checks to cover juvenile records for gun buyers under 21, and would close the, quote, "boyfriend loophole" by banning gun purchases by people convicted of domestic abuse and dating relationships, among other provisions. Hinson said there are many parts of the Senate bill she supports, including increased mental health funding, training for law enforcement, and bolstering school security. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, June 24th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to Your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.